You're listening to the Reinvest Podcast, where each Tuesday we will show you how to reclaim, reconnect, and refocus your life by bringing you the top real estate professionals in the industry. We'll pull back the curtain so you can implement these tools and tactics to build generational wealth. Your hosts, Garrett Gatton and Seth Simonillo. All right, we're back on the mic here. We hit our year marker a couple months ago by the time this is dropped.
Yeah, no, it feels good. We've been at it now for a while. Thanks to everyone who's been hanging in there with us and listening to our new episodes and following along with what we're doing at Reinvest. So yeah, it's been awesome.
We hit a couple thousand downloads not long ago. So it's been
humble
a lot
beginnings.
Of fun. Yeah, you got to start somewhere. Well, and on that note, you know, we talk about networking and that's obviously something within real estate, really business and success anywhere is, you know, your net worth is your network. And so it's been super fun to be able to meet people from across the country.
I think people usually say your network is your net worth, but what you said is also right. So today we have a special guest, Billy Keels. How you doing, Billy?
Hey, what's going on, Seth, Ben, Garrett, gentlemen? It's nice to be here. I really appreciate the opportunity to share a little bit of some stories and also hope to make at least a little bit of impact with at least one person today. So,
man, well, and you've got an awesome story. You know, I think a lot of our listeners and people that we've come across, you know, just this journey of investing, they found success in another industry and then at some point made the jump and translated that success into real estate. And so I guess just kicking things off from the get-go, tell us a little bit about who you are and how'd you get to where you are today with the real estate journey?
Yeah, sure. And so one of the things, guys, if you don't mind, because I know what you guys are doing and how much energy you've placed into the podcast and continue to grow. And so for those of you that are listening and watching, if you have not yet left the Reinvest with Seth and Garrett, an honest written review as well as rating, take just a couple seconds to do that because it's also going to help them to attract the guests that are going to help you get closer to your goals. So if you haven't done that, literally it only takes a couple seconds. So, so hopefully you guys are okay with that.
Yeah.
But also too, Billy Keels. I mean, I'm a guy from the Midwest of Ohio. I was born in the capital, Columbus, Ohio. Watched my parents struggle early on. Both of my parents, they knew they had the financial education that they'd received. The whole thing was about working harder, not necessarily working smarter. So they worked multiple jobs. And they always told us, hey, look, you know what? Don't do like we're doing. You go out, get really good grades, continue to get higher education. So I went to college, did that, and then go out and get yourself a good job. And so I followed that path. You know, one of those A students. Today I'm a recovering perfectionist. and you know, we lived in multiple states, lived in Ohio and in Colorado and Texas and stuff like that. And eventually went to college as a high achiever. I was used to like going out, studying, getting the goal and getting what I was expecting. But I found rejection pretty early on, right at the end of college, because I was set to go out for my dream job. That dream job, well, I was turned down not once, but twice, because at the end of my first degree, I applied for the role, got rejected. So I decided to add a second degree, went and lived overseas, very first time in my life. Thought I was going to go back. Hey, I've got this great degree, a second degree. I've done international experience and I got rejected again.
What was the dream role?
The dream role was working for a company, working for P&G, because I went to school at Miami of Ohio. And so I was a marketing major and ended up getting a Spanish major later. But I got rejected twice. And so I wasn't used to dealing with that. Like I didn't know how to deal with that. And, fortunately, I have a really good friend of mine named Andy. Shouts out to Andy, who told me about this job opportunity in St. Louis, Missouri, where these people were traveling around the world. And I thought, well, this sounds really too good to be true. You're traveling Fortune 500 CEOs. And I was one of 20, well, there were 6,000 resumes that went, and I was one of 26 people that was selected for this role.
Whoa.
And the thing of it is, guys, is that this role completely changed my mind because in 5 years, I had the opportunity to work and travel throughout some 58 different countries.
Wow.
And so being a guy from, you know, the Midwest of the US, my world was kind of where I thought it was. And so then I traveled 58 countries in five years, traveling 25 to 28 days a month. It was just amazing. Opened my mind to completely new different things. And, although it sounds really, really cool, at the end of that 5 years in 58 countries, I was kind of tired and I decided, you know what? Even though I'm still pretty young, right? I was 26 at the time. I said, hey, look, I'm just going to take a 1-year sabbatical. going to go overseas. I'd really wanted to learn French. So I was accepted at a university in Paris, went there. As I was accepted, I wanted to learn French language, learn more about the culture. I wanted to learn how to salsa dance, believe it or not. And I also wanted to learn more about wine.
Are those French things? Guys,
what'd you say?
Are those French things?
Not really. Salsa. Except the French language and culture. That's definitely and a little bit of the wine. I think it's the salsa that kind of throws things off.
It's the European stuff. So.
Yeah, exactly. So here's, but here's the thing. It has been 22 years. I lived in France, Italy, and currently living in Spain. And I start thinking about it, and all of this came through a rejection event, right? Because I didn't get my dream job. And so what that has taught me is that even though there are moments that can seem pretty, pretty dark, or you're not getting or achieving the goals that you want, there's something that's positive on the other side of whatever that rejection event that you're going through is. And mine ended up, you know, it's also, I have two beautiful, wonderful little boys that are just the inspiration of my life. And that has been as a result of, you know, traveling and living here in Europe. And yeah, I know you guys are both fathers as well. So that's something you can, I'm sure, appreciate. But yeah, I mean, that's just a little bit about me. I've also worked in the corporate world for 26 years. Most recently, I started in the US and then I took that 1 year sabbatical. Then I got into the hardware space in IT. And then eventually it was in the enterprise software space where I was a sales and sales leader. I did that across Europe, Middle East, and Africa. The largest business that I managed was about $100 million business, led multiple teams of people cross discipline or cross country, always in the area of sales and sales leadership. So it was fantastic while it lasted, but I had eventually wanted to transition. And one of the ways that I started doing that was by investing and taking more control over the financial outcomes of my life. And I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about some of those things. But yeah, so that's a little bit about me. Billy Keels, this guy from Midwest Ohio, who's, you know, today I've traveled to 86 different countries, learned 4 different languages. And so I guess speak a total of 5 because English still counts, I guess. And yeah, we'll talk to you guys, whatever.
5 languages.
Yeah.
So Spanish, French, English,
Italian, and Catalan, which is the language that they speak here locally where I live in Spain.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I did know that actually. So yeah. I don't, you know, hablo español.
Hablas muy bien. Hablas muy bien.
I have a really, we probably won't get into this the podcast, but I've got a really funny Spanish story. Long story short, I took 4 years in Spanish. We went to Peru. I thought I was a big wig. I went away from the translator and made an absolute fool of myself. So, but you got to put yourself out there. So a couple things. First of all, as you're watching this video, what you don't know about Billy is he's 50 years old. And I should say 50 years young.
Not yet.
I will.
Like, don't pressure me.
I just like, man, but I think your energy though is so good. And there is a direct correlation, and you know, and this is kind of a tangent about mindset and how that translates even to your physical appearance and your habits and your routines and all of that. So there's been some awesome studies out there. I think I was reading as a Mark Batterson, Win the Day was the book I was reading. And he was talking about this retirement community of these people who were, they were all older, right? Maybe, you know, 80s and everybody was, you know, aches and pains and illnesses and stuff. And they did this case study where they went in and they recreated an environment of when those people were in their 20s. So they decorated everything like it was from the 1940s. You know, they put on clothes that they used to wear back then. They did activities that were related back then. And what was crazy is people's energy levels started to soar. They started playing football. Like it was, the activity level is crazy. All going back to your mindset. But on the mindset thing is you were kind of given some context to your story. It's easy to look back now, easier to see the hindsight of, hey, this led to, you know, everything that I've experienced now, didn't see it at the time. But I think the million-dollar question is, when you're in it, when you're on the just on the other side or in the rejection still, or something didn't pan out the way that you wanted it to, you don't know yet all of the success that's going to come from that. So talk about your mindset. How did you continue to kind of like forge forward after that rejection to be able to look back on it and say, wow, I'm so glad that that happened the way it did?
Yeah, for me, it's really, it comes down to, I think the thing that helps to make anyone successful it's having clarity of vision and going out and executing, right? It sounds too simple, but whenever you put a goal in front of yourself and you're clear on why you want that goal, mm-hmm. Afterwards, everything else is just, it's kind of noise. So you just continue to work towards the goal. I knew that I wanted to learn the things I talked about before, French language and culture. I wanted to learn how to salsa dance and wanted to learn about wine. And so as I was in the eye of the storm, I was doing that. And there were moments that are also difficult. You know, there are days when I remember like, man, I don't understand anything anybody's saying and I'm here by myself. I don't know anybody, mm-hmm. but you continue to work towards that goal and it helps you work through the challenging times. Also knowing that there's always people that are around you, like family members were a phone call away, or maybe it's someone that I'd met the day before that I didn't have a really great relationship with, but hey, I knew that I could reach out to that person and those relationships help to get you through the most difficult, challenging times. Mm-hmm. And eventually, because you knew why you wanted to do what you wanted to do, which was in using that example of learning languages and learning more about the culture, it got me through the challenging times. Yeah. And then, you know, years later, I look back and I go, wow, you know what? I speak Spanish, Catalan, French.
and I'm Italian, a freaking good salsa
dancer. And a little bit English. And my salsa is not too bad, you know? I'm a little rusty because it was a while I haven't danced. But, the basics are still there.
Bro, if I was a rusty salsa dancer, I would be, like, still a baller husband. Because of, even if I was, like, a two.
So you move over to Europe and you had some goals. You started learning, you know, French, and you said you enrolled in school in Paris. So kind of throughout that, though, you got back into the corporate world and you stayed in Europe, right?
Yep.
So you stayed in Europe, kind of worked through the corporate jobs that you were talking about, some different positions. Mm-hmm. So at what point in that journey did you start considering real estate? Because now you're not working in the corporate world, right?
Are you full-time in real estate? No, I'm full-time in investing. Full-time investing and helping others to do the same. Yep.
Okay. So when did you start to make that transition to realize like, hey, real estate and investing could be an option moving forward?
I remember probably the very first time that I'd ever been exposed to investing in real estate. I had one of my managers when I was working at the enterprise software company. He lived in Barcelona and he owned a couple properties that were back in Scotland, in Glasgow. And I remember one day after one of our meetings, he was telling me about he owned a couple houses and he was telling me about this. And I was kind of like, wow, that seems pretty cool. But I didn't really think much about it. But I just thought, wow, this seems like he's got a lot of control over this. He's able to predict his income and this is kind of cool. And he's also got a corporate job because he's my boss. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of started it. And I remember thinking that was kind of cool. But more than anything else, because I am a recovering perfectionist and that a student. And so I got the good grades, got the good job and was moving up the ladder. And so I fully bought into the corporate dream. And I have a lot of really, really positive things to say about and experiences from my corporate experience. And so, but the thing that I realized like now kind of I'm on the other side of it is I really bought into the dream. And so that kind of all came crashing down because I was a young father. And this was probably early 2010s, 2012, something like that. Yeah. And one of the things as a young father, I always said, hey, listen, you know, my family comes first and I did everything and continue to do the things for my family first. And on a particular day, my oldest son on his third birthday, something happened in my life because the morning of his birthday, I remember I woke his mom up and our youngest child at like 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning, because I was catching a flight to go to a business meeting in Frankfurt, Germany. And it was really important because I wanted to give him a hug and kiss and sing happy birthday. And we did all that. But the thing that changed for me was, you know, we did all the happy birthday to you early first thing in the morning. I'm out and I'm gone. And then later on that evening, when like all of the family was together, I was at this business meeting, like in a different country. Mm-hmm. And everybody was together kind of at the celebration. And I realized like, what am I doing?
Yeah.
I'm doing all this thing. I'm following this corporate path. But then I realized that I was not being congruent with myself. And the things that were truly important to me, i.e. being present physically and mentally at my son's third birthday, that was not happening.
Yeah.
And so it was the moment in the trigger in my life that said, I've got to do something differently, because right now I'm depending on my role in my job and this money that I'm putting somewhere else, and I don't even have any idea what it's doing, i.e. 401k or equivalent, or just putting your money in direct dollar cost averaging kind of stuff. If you don't know what it's doing, then you don't know what it's doing. Doesn't matter where it is.
Right.
And so that changed everything for me. And it was at that, like after that, when I got back from that flight, that I literally came back and I wrote down, like, I want to be able to earn X amount of money, because that money is going to allow me to do X, Y, and Z, you know, do it over a period of 5 years, like most people do.
Right.
But that was the thing that changed my life. It had nothing to do with money. It had to, everything to do with saying, I want to be in control of the time and the options that I have to do. 'Cause I don't want to have to take any more trips if they're not really aligned with what I truly value.
Yeah. It's powerful.
And I don't say that lightly, like, 'cause remember, I watch my parents both work two jobs all the time. And there are certain types of jobs and roles where you have to be present. Like, that's not an option. And that's just a life decision that you make. That wasn't my case. Right. You know, I was a high wage earner. I was doing the things that I wanted to do and needed to do, and had the nice, you know, bank account and a nice car and all this other kind of stuff, but I just wasn't being congruent with myself. Yeah. And so I had to take a step back, and that's when I made a change. And that was, you know, that was 11, 12 years ago. And since that time, I've never missed, ever, and will not miss any other special engagements that I have.
That's so
for my boys, for my family, because that's awesome. The thing. You can get it really confused, guys. And I know I'm maybe ranting here a little bit, but when you grow up like I did, I didn't grow up with money. I didn't see, money was always a struggle. And so I thought that having more money was the solution to everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's really not. Because what you can't get back is the time. And so I would never change anything that's happened in my life. But I can tell you, the answer to your question was, what changed my life? It was that. It was that, that not being there that evening. And it's just helped me to be the best version of me every single day, and be the best version of me with others.
Maya, if you get nothing else from this podcast, we could end it right now. And you could just go back and listen to that 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Because that was just powerful. I mean, that really boils it down to, I mean, what is important? What is your why? Mm. Why are you working? You know, people sometimes get so caught up in just doing it that they don't ask those questions. And then boom, they miss 10 years of their kid's life.
Well, and you follow it only so far. It's like people stop shy of asking the why. What's my why? You know, well, my why is to make a lot of money for my family. Okay, but flesh that out. You know, so my father-in-law, who just hard worker, Midwest mentality, exactly what you're talking about. And there's a lot of wisdom kind of in that culture. And one of the things that he had said to me, you know, he doesn't have a big business. He's a solopreneur. He's been floor laying his entire life. Mm-hmm. So when I started to get into business, which I did not have a background in, you know, I'm trying to piece together this framework of what is business, why, the power of it, the potential, trying to use my skills and leverage that for the greater good. And he said something very profound. He said, you know, when I started my business on my own, I wanted to make sure that I was running my business and my business wasn't running me. And that, you're right, we get it confused, because it's easy to think that you're doing the right things. And I can't tell you how many times have we been caught saying, well, I'm doing this for my family.
Yeah.
Well, what if that thing that you're doing is actually not moving, you know, down the ball down the field?
And then our wives have to remind us, like, you gotta be home. And then it's like, okay, we gotta refocus. We gotta shave out some things.
So, moving into the meat of what I want to talk about today is scaling a real estate portfolio from overseas. I mean, you're not even in the U.S., but yet you're finding success still, which I think is demystifies objections that a lot of people have of why they can't invest out of state, out of the area, even overseas. So tell us, you know, what resources, you know, you said, this is the lifestyle I want. This is where I'm going to live, but I want to create wealth and I want to do it through real estate. What were the avenues that those first few investments, what did that look like in the context of real estate? How'd you do that? How'd you bridge that Atlantic Ocean?
Yeah. So that wasn't the goal. Like, my initial goal was just to, I just didn't want to miss any more special events. Right. I mean, the plan wasn't even as strategic as you're explaining it now. It was like, okay, well, what do I need to do? And so I took, like, tending to overthink things, which is what we do as recovering perfectionists, is, you know, I built this plan, and the plan was all about, how do I make purchases where I lived. And one of my things that I knew that I wanted to create was cash flow, because I felt like that was going to keep me. Well, that was the first line on my goal, right? Mm-hmm. And so when I started penciling things out where I lived in Barcelona, Spain, the cash flow wasn't like what I was reading in the books or hearing on the podcast. The cash flow was like negative 50 euros a month, negative 125 euros a month, negative or dollars. It doesn't matter. Same thing, right? And so I was like, this is not going to work. Like, how am I going to get to this point of freedom where I can't, where I can like not take the trip if I don't want to? And so eventually a couple of friends of mine that are here in Spain were like, hey, listen, man, you're like, you're American. Why don't you just do it back in the States? And so I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, duh, that makes sense.
Forgot about that.
But the challenge was exactly what you just said, Garrett. There was the Atlantic Ocean between me and the next closest like door that I could purchase was like 9,000 miles. Like, how in the world was I going to do that? And so I did it. I can tell you that I did it wrong a lot in order to get it right.
Yeah. Mm.
Because what I was thinking of doing was, and what I did, let me tell you what I did. And let me then tell you what I think the way to do it and how I help other people do it, which is number one, is to get super clear, because I knew that I was working in a corporate job that I liked, didn't love, but I liked, and I was making a lot of money and I had money sitting in the bank, and I didn't want that money sitting in the bank anymore, because I've been reading these books and telling me about how the erosion of capital and blah, blah. So I had the money. I was looking for the property. I had the money. I bought the property overseas. Got it, you know, found out about debt service and was able to get that.
Where was that first acquisition at?
It was in the state of New Jersey.
Okay.
Nice. And so I don't own anything in there anymore, but that was the very first one. So what I will say is that I got the, you know, I got the property, as I bought the property, realizing that it was a rental property. I didn't really know much about the market at the time. I purchased it there because I had family members that were nearby. And I thought, you know, worst case scenario, if things kind of go wrong, I can at least pick up the phone and have a family member go run and figure it out. That's the first red flag, everybody. If that's what you're thinking, that's the first red flag, because that's what I did.
Relying on family to help you.
To bail you out, right? And so what started happening eventually, once we finally had, you know, residents that were living there, problems started happening. And then when the problem started happening, guess what? I didn't have any systems in place to take care of the issues. Like when something happened with the closet, or when something would happen with the sink, there were no systems in place, and I was thousands of miles away. And so guess what? We had to kind of fix that, or I had to come fix that. So we put systems in place to be able to respond to issues that your residents are going to have, because when you live in a place and you're there a lot of hours, well, that's what's going to happen. You're going to have problems. And so then after that, then I realized that, oh, I guess I've got to build a team. And so then I built the team, and the team knew more about the location. And that was kind of really doing everything backwards. It was completely the wrong way to do things, right? Mm. So what I realized is I did it completely backwards. So the one thing that I did get right is I knew what I wanted to do and why I wanted to do it. Like, I didn't want to miss any more special events. And I knew one of the ways to do that was to be able to create cash flow. So that was my personal kind of like goal and the philosophy that I had. And then I was looking for, and what I've since, after you personally know what you're looking to do, then you go to the location that's going to give you the highest probability of achieving whatever goal it is that you want to achieve. And I'm talking about from an investment perspective. If I would have wanted appreciation because I had a longer time frame, maybe I would have selected another market, but I was focused on cash flow. Mm. So then later I learned and went through and found the location that would make the most sense. And then once I found the location, then guess what? It was time to start building the team, because I knew I wanted to build long-term relationships and a specific location. Right. So then I found the A players in a location. And then guess what I started realizing, gentlemen, is that if you personally know what it is that you want, you're in a location that's going to give you the highest probability of getting you what you need. And you have an A team that can understand the location and knows what you're trying to do. Then it doesn't matter what the opportunity is. Like, it could be a mobile home park, a self-storage facility. It could be energy equipment. Because the opportunity is the thing that matters the least. It's how do you get to actually purchasing whatever asset you're trying to purchase. Good. And having alignment on the front end. I did it completely the opposite way around. I had money, I was ready to go. And then when things started happening, I was like, oh, I don't even know this thing about the market. I don't know if there's negative growth or positive growth or any of that kind of stuff. So don't do what I did in the beginning, but more it's follow personally what it is you're looking for, go to the location, build your team. And then afterwards, whatever the asset is, and it really doesn't matter. I know we're here to talk about real estate, but it doesn't matter really.
The asset. And when you're talking about building your team for maybe some of the newbies out there, what do you mean when you say, I'm going to go to this area and build my team out? What does that look like from an investor trying to go out of the area? Or maybe it's even in your area and you're just new. What is that?
Well, just for people that aren't in the area, like if you're in the area, it's just really easy. It's go to a local RIA meeting. Like that's the simplest thing, because you're going to start. And it's not necessarily that all the A players are at the RIA meetings, but at least they're people that want to be active. Right. And then from there, you're going to meet who is it that's going to be your broker, your insurance agent, your your tax professional, there's so many different professionals that
property
you can look
manager
on your property. Yeah. Your property manager. Like you can find them very easily, but if you're someone who's like me, who's always done this long distance, it's a matter of saying, okay, well, I know that I want to go to, I'll just make it up. Cause I've got, I won't make it up. I'll tell you. I mean, Charlotte, North Carolina is an area that you wanted to invest in. Okay, perfect. So you go online and you look at the different tools and you say, brokers in, real estate brokers in this area or property managers in Charlotte. And you find the people that are on the list. And then guess what? Because although I was doing this like 10 years before the pandemic, most people realized that after the pandemic, you can actually start to build relationships with people when you see they're visible every single page. You pick up the phone and you call them because they're the ones who are looking to be very, very visible with people. Afterwards, you'll figure out if you mesh well or not. But then usually the A players run with other A players. So if you find your property management company, they're probably going to know who the top brokers or dealers are in their specific area. Okay, cool. So then you found them. Chances are they're probably also going to know the top insurance agents. And then those top insurance agents are probably going to know the top attorneys. But you've got to start somewhere, and it usually starts online, and then you've got to pick up a phone. Like back in the day, I didn't have a phone that I could pick up, but now you've got WhatsApp, FaceTime, all this other kind of stuff where you can even make free calls. And I'm talking about international. If you're within the US, everything gets so much simpler.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But it's a matter of taking that first step. And then once you take the first step, that's how you're building your team. And it could be as simple as you need a lender, you need an agent, and you need a property manager to get started. Mm-hmm. And you want to have somebody looking at your legal documents and things like that. But then from there, you build your team as you need or kind of build as you go. Does that make sense, guys?
No, that's perfect. That's exactly what I wanted to hear.
I think the question then is, how do you keep from getting burnt? Right? Because there's a lot of information out there to be able to vet people for sure. How do you approach a conversation with intentionality to figure out what that alignment is? And like, what were some people that you talked to that you're like, that's not going to work out? What were the flags that tips you off to say, that's not the person I want to move forward with on my team?
Well, so there's a couple flags. One, if the people don't respond to you, that means that they're probably not the ones that you want to work with. I mean, it seems super obvious, but there are people that will like continue to try and like, I've seen this person every site and they won't respond to me. Well, guess what? It's probably for a reason. So stop trying to get this person.
a reflection on their business.
Correct. One thing. And then the other thing is when it goes back to having clarity, know what it is that you want, and then, be prepared to ask some of the questions that you need. Like, well, for me, the team members have to understand the location that they're in and the business that they're part of. So, one of the first things I want to understand is, who are some of the, who are the network that you're typically working with? Mm-hmm. If they say, well, I'm usually working by myself. Well, then that means for you as the person who's looking to build relationships, then it's going to be a challenge because A players run with A players. And so understanding their network, that's also important for you if you're looking to build relationships and go long-term relationships in that specific area. You may want to ask them things like, how do they deal with difficult situations, or how are they communicating with people who are not in the same location as themselves or even are in the same location? Because these are things that are going to matter, because when everything's going okay, everything's going okay. But when the stuff hits the fan, then you're going to kind of have to figure out like, okay, do I have the right team in place? And here's the other thing, guys, there is no 100% guarantee that you do everything in your due diligence period. And then things always work out the way that they are. Like, we're right. all human beings. There are going to be problems that happen and arise, even when you have A players or A teams. But it's so, how are you going to resolve it from
let's
there?
Let's hit that, so that right now. I you were talking about when stuff hits the fan. Right now, we are in an economic, you know, market shift, not just even in the U.S., but globally. I'm sure you're seeing that whole factor of things that people who are just so close to the situation here, they're so hyper-focused on the U.S. economy, but there's a global shift happening. So what are you doing proactively or even reactively for your investments and your teams that are scattered where these investments are located? What are the conversations you're having? How are you trying to get out ahead of this thing?
Well, just doing exactly that. I mean, when there are issues, you stay in front of them. Like when it's, you know, we're making, I believe that you're, especially when you are working with investors or investor family members, I like to call them, when things are going well, people want to know about it. But also when things are not going well, they also want to know about it. So if you're going to communicate on the things that are not working well, do that. I would highly suggest that when the things are not going well, that you also be very much in front of things, and let your investors know, or if you're looking to invest, stay ahead of, or stay atop of, or abreast of current events, like what's happening, how could this potentially impact you, and let your investors know if you're working with investors, or if you are looking to invest, then you know, surround yourself with other people who have been through this. Because things that we're going through now are things that we've seen some variation of in the past.
Right.
And if you speak to people that have a couple grays, then they may be able to share their previous experience with you. Right.
Yeah.
There's nothing that's going to make everything 100% safe. Right. Because anytime you, by definition, if you're investing in any type of asset,
risk.
There's always going to be some risk involved, but surround yourself right. with people who've been through it yeah. and seen it before. And most importantly, stay in the communication. For some people, they only like to do it in writing. I specifically like to communicate in video just because I like video. And I feel like, you know, our investor family members appreciate that. Maybe some people just like voice, whatever it is, but just making sure that you're over communicating.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. What assets do you guys invest in? I mean, are you doing multifamily, single family? Are you doing a plethora of the different things?
So there's a number of different things. So there are not just multifamily and smaller and larger multifamily, on a mobile home park as well. Okay. I'm also really involved in the energy space, specifically around equipment that's with energy. Okay. And the reason for that is because it solves a very specific problem for high wage earners who are accredited investors. Something that I was when I was in my corporate life. Once I understood the difference between what is passive income, meaning the IRS definition of passive income, not mm-hmm. like not working for, like having your money work for you,
right.
and active income. So there's a big difference yeah. between active income and passive income. And because I was a high wage earner, one of the things that I wanted to be able to do was generate more income and also help to drive down my income tax. And the energy space specifically is the area that we've been able to help our investors or our investor family members be able to generate income and also at the same time keep Uncle Sam out of their pocket in terms right. of income taxes.
Yeah, and it makes a lot of sense.
So these are the different areas that we tend to invest. And the one area that we really invest in today or help others invest in today is in that energy space.
Very cool. And then kind of unrelated, do you have any investments in Columbus still?
I don't. Okay. I don't have any in my personal portfolio yeah. in Columbus. No.
Just
a lot of family and friends.
I wasn't sure if you ever went back there just to invest in your roots at all in there, but no, that's very cool.
Well, I was back there last year, and I do plan on going back again this year. So cool. Trips to Columbus are always fun, especially if awesome. They coincide with Buckeye games.
But, yeah, there you go. Yeah. All right, we're gonna jump into our smaller pocket segment. Billy, why don't you go ahead and tell us what was your worst real estate deal? So what was kind of like what, you know, anything that can go wrong will go wrong. So what was a deal that maybe went sideways for you? What did you learn from it? And maybe you salvaged it. How did it turn out?
Yeah, I mean, the thing that I want to highlight is overall, the deal didn't go completely south. In that, I've been pretty fortunate But something happened early on in the deal that I could have very easily prevented. And I want to share this with your audience because it's something that happens pretty frequently, especially when you're getting started. Like when you're getting started and you're having early success, it's really, really easy to rest on your laurels, right? Just to say, okay, I did it last time and it's going to happen this time. Da-da.
Yeah.
Give you a very specific thing that cost me about $25,000. Because I didn't pay attention to what I was doing, right? I had made a couple purchases, like, you know, I think it was two purchases and I got to my third purchase, or maybe it was a fourth purchase. And I'd always heard, because at the time I was buying smaller multifamily and, you know, one of the things was always to get a home inspection report. And so I did that, and, you know, I was really on it the first, second, third time, and the fourth time I got the home inspection report. So I made the investment. But then when the home inspection report came, I just kind of like put it to the side because all the other ones were like, hey, you know, just to have this. And so about a year and a half later, we found out that there were some issues with the roof. Well, the issues with the roof and having to have residents that were displaced in hotels and paying for all this kind of stuff cost me about $25,000. And I was super upset. I was like, how in the world did, you know, how did this happen so fast? And so what happened was I went back and I looked at the home inspection report. Guess what, guys?
It was there.
In the home inspection report, it was pretty clear that there were some issues with the roof. Wow. Like literally. So I paid for the home inspection report, didn't take the time to read it. And it cost, not just in the financial aspect, like roughly $25,000, but also reputation wise, right? Because that's something that had I seen it early on, I could have renegotiated the terms and conditions.
Right.
Or something like that. And I wouldn't have had this negative experience on the residents that were staying in our place that were displaced and, you know, had to stay in a hotel for a while.
Yeah.
So overall, when we sold that asset, I mean, it worked out really well, but along the way, there was a pretty important lesson that I particularly like to share because that particular thing should have not happened. And I also know that anytime that there is any kind of, diligence item that's done, and it may not be me, but it was somebody else that will be actually going through, making sure, following up and making sure that, hey, we've covered the items that are going to be relevant to securing the purchase of this particular asset and doing it in the best conditions, terms and conditions possible.
Yeah.
So hopefully that was helpful.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Yeah, no, that's great, man. All right. We're going to go into our show segment called our little nugget. All right, man. I know club music. I'm don't do the club scene, but if I did, I'd be listening to that song. So
it's just the air horn.
I don't do it either. I don't do it anymore either.
Man, I'm too old for that stuff. I'm in bed by 10:30. What is one practical takeaway or piece of advice that our listeners can implement to their real estate investing businesses?
And I'll share this just because I am a recovering perfectionist.
What does that mean? Does that mean that you were putting a strain on your relationships because you were hyper analytical and now you've had to walk it back a little bit? Or,
well, I mean, recovering perfectionist is just like you have a tendency to want to do everything perfect. So you wait until everything is perfect before you get started. And this is what happens early on when you're like, you study and you study a lot and then you take the test and you get an A and you do that over and over for 10, 12 years. Yeah. And that's the outcome. You think that that's the path.
Right. And life happens like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And so the reality is the sooner you take action, the sooner you get feedback. Mm-hmm. And for those of you that like feedback, you're going to course correct much faster and get to whatever end game you're looking for sooner. So it's, I guess it would really be just take more action sooner and whatever dosis that is for you, right? If you do like, so it's kind of like what they say about investing. Like your attention goes as soon as you place your first dollar or your first euro or whatever it is.
Right.
And it's the same thing. Like get in the game, take action. Yeah. Don't stop. Don't overthink things. Cause no matter how much book smarts you have, something's going to happen that the book doesn't cover. And, you know, just take, you know, get started.
Life doesn't happen in a vacuum. You know, it's very much that apprenticeship model of like, get in, get the reps, you know. What's wild to me is every other industry, we recognize the value of that. And then we come to certain things or our context and we think it functions differently, but it's all the same. So awesome, man. Hey, in closing here, what's been one of the greatest resources in your real estate investing career?
the first thing that comes to my mind is my network, my relationships. Mm-hmm.
And what are those active, I mean, are those people, business relationships in the markets that you've invested in? Are those people you've had on the podcast? Are those peers that are investors kind of alongside of you in the same space?
Wow. You know, it's a combination, because there are times where, you know, you'll speaking to a podcast guest and you go, wow, that's a fantastic idea. And you build a relationship with that person and you can follow up later. Or right. Maybe they've just been business mentors. You know, I'm very, very fortunate. I happen to know people that have very large, you know, seven, eight, and nine figure businesses. Mm-hmm. And being able to tap in and get just their wisdom or their point of view, yeah, mm-hmm, is something that is helpful as you're starting to build a business. Or even when I was in the corporate world, having internal mentors, it's always been, it's the relationships. The relationships are the things that are the difference makers, at least, yep, in terms of, human resources from my perspective, because this is we're in a service-based business and it's all about, the relationships. So that's, yeah, to me, is the thing that, yeah, more than like the books or more than the technology, it's the people, it's the relationships.
That's good. That's good. Talk about your company. How can our listeners follow your success? Kind of learn more about what you're doing.
Yeah, sure. I mean, there's a lot that we're doing. I mean, we are serving accredited investors. And I know you guys have talked about accredited investors, mm-hmm, before. We are specifically helping those people who are just like I was. Like, I was in a high wage job. I was working, I was talking to somebody earlier, said, working 9 to 9, like 9 a.m. to 9 a.m. all the time. And we're investing in assets, but it seems that Uncle Sam always has his hand in your pocket for the income tax thing. And so, mm-hmm, for people that are accredited investors and are looking to be able to generate income and at the same time keep more of your income tax, we've been helping them at First Generation Capital Partners, which is the name, mm-hmm, of the company. People can find out more about how we're doing that at, they can go to firstgencp.com/paylesstax. That starts the education, at least helping them to understand how we're doing that. First Generation Capital Partners, kind of like it says. I mean, I have a special place in my heart for first generation accredited investors because I am one. And sometimes, yeah, you feel pretty lonely and you're like, hey, look, I don't feel comfortable talking to my parents about this. And I don't know, I've never really talked about money with other friends of mine, and right, everybody at work only wants to do the stuff at work. And so, if you are a first generation accredited investor and you kind of also want to have a group of people you can chat with, that's what we're doing. Talked a little bit earlier too about the podcast that kind of, yeah, feeds into that. The Going Long podcast with Billy Keels. It's been around now for almost 3 years, which it seems just like,
come on,
unbelievable. Nice. that it's been around.
Yeah.
That's how we're connecting and helping people. And I personally like connecting with people on LinkedIn. It's a great place to be. That's kind of what it is that we're doing and ways that people can connect.
Awesome. We'll put all that stuff in the show notes, and that way people have the resource to go there. So yeah, Billy, thank you so much for taking the time and sharing your story with us and what you've learned and helping the investors that are going to come after you. So,
all right. Fantastic. Seth and Garrett, thank you so much for the opportunity to be here and share a little bit of my story with you guys. And really kudos to the two of you. Here's to many more episodes, many more years, and making impacts on lots and lots of lives, in the hundreds of thousands, if not millions of lives.
Yes.
Awesome, man. Awesome. Thank you. As always, excited that you joined us on another episode of the Reinvest Podcast. If this episode added to your tool belt or left you feeling inspired, go ahead and share it with a friend. Stay tuned every Tuesday for new episodes. And if you want to get in touch with us, go to our LinkedIn or Facebook profiles and shoot us a message. Move farther, reach higher, and grow deeper. See you next time.